So good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning, all. People can hear me in the back, okay? Lucy?
Good.
Got this. There's too many people here. I think I won't today. And everyone can hear me on Zoom, okay? Perfect. Try not to get my glasses fogged here. Well, I'm not sure what the official greeting is. Is it Happy Awakening Day? A good Rohatsu Day? I'm not sure.
I think you're allowed to take your mask off, are you not?
Well, we're pretty crowded today, so I thought I would just kind of keep it on. I'm not sure what officially we can do.
Dr. Bonnie says,
you got 6 feet, you're good.
6 feet.
6 feet is good? Okay. I notice these days I feel a little strange in a group taking my mask off. It's like one of those dreams you wake up and you're not dressed, you know? Something's missing. Oh, my goodness. Well, wonderful to see you, my friends, to see people on Zoom, and to thank you for your practice, people who sat yesterday and through part of the night or through the whole night. I deeply appreciate all the effort and practice that you have made. So somehow it's my turn to talk about the impossible again, the nature of awakening that lies at the very heart of our practice. The awakening or the enlightenment that we trace back 2,600 years ago or more or less, and half a world away to the life of Siddhartha Gautama. But we keep coming back to this question of, like, what is awakening? Awakening is talked about in the Buddhist literature in very many ways, about as our true nature, our home, our being fully and deeply human, etc. But the complexities of the human life, the human condition, causes us to forget our home. And practice, our practice that we do in all its many aspects, I suppose we could say is really the path of remembrance, coming back to remember what has always been, right here, right now. But you may be asking, well, wait a minute, what is awakening? Like, yeah. You know, very poetic, but what is it? The literature of the Zen tradition is actually not much help. Zen teachers have avoided talking about awakening, although many of the records have stories, lots of stories, involving situations or examples of awakening. But the teachers don't describe it, right? A finger is raised, a shout given, and strange reply given to a Dharma question, and suddenly you hear the lines or you read the lines. In that instant, the monk was awakened. The monk gained enlightenment. And that's it. I remember years ago, the first year that I lived in Japan. I was there just as a young man, 1920. And I was living there practicing Aikido with my Aikido teacher. And my Japanese Aikido teacher studied Zen. He had studied Zen for many years, and he studied under two teachers very diligently. And one day he said to me, as we were sitting in the coffee shop, he said, The difference between awakening and delusion is as thin as a sheet of rice paper. My ears perked up, and I said, yes. But in the good Zen tradition, he would say no more, leaving it to me to figure out whatever I was going to figure out. And I am grateful now that he didn't fill my head with more tales of enlightenment experiences or give pedantic explanations about what enlightenment may be, because that would have been of no help at all. And yet, of course, to have no vision, however hazy, is not helpful either. It's a fine line, really, I think, a fine line between what is helpful and what is not in this case. Yesterday, Kate told us stories of Mara, right? The great demon who kind of kept distracting Siddhartha as he was sitting under the Bodhi tree with the armies and those kind of his lovely daughters who would kind of shimmy in front of Siddhartha trying to distract him and other things. And later, of course, as Kate said, you know, Mara didn't go away. He stayed. Like, he was trying to pull the Buddha now off the path and say, well, wait a minute, I don't want him to get more people awakened, so I'm going to try to distract him too. Well, Mara is alive and well, still doing their best to distract everyone from awakening. Mara is that inner voice inside you that says something like, maybe, oh, this practice is too hard. I can't meditate. My life is too busy for this. I've got to go visit my girlfriend, my boyfriend. No time to be on the cushion. Or Mara is the voice that says, just imagine how sweet enlightenment will be. How wonderful. All problems will be gone. Everything will be clear. Everything will be possible. Let's just dream about this some more. How sweet it will be. And Mara is the voice that says, try harder. Stop being such a wimp. Sit longer. Ignore those screaming knees. You'll never get enlightened unless you quit your job, travel to the mountains of Tibet, and live in a cave wearing nothing but a loincloth and eating wild nettles. I'm sure you've experienced some tone of Mara in your practice, giving you these kind of messages. Fortunately, our ancestors in the Buddhist tradition come to our rescue, telling us over and over again that awakening is within everyday life itself. Here's a poem by Chiono, the first woman in Japan to receive a Dharma transmission, at least as far as we know, and to teach in the Zen tradition. She lived roughly the same time as Dogen did, way back in the 1200s. Here's her poem, at least one translation of it. This way and that, I tried to save the old pail, the bamboo strap about to break, until at last the bottom fell out. No more water in the pail, no more moon in the water. Now, according to legend, or at least what people have commented about this poem and her, Chiono, Chiono meditated and practiced for many years at a nunnery, a monastery, and at one point became quite disheartened about her practice. And one day she was carrying water back from the well to the monastery, kind of an everyday job that had to be done. But she was carrying it in an old bucket, and it was a bucket that she had repaired many times. And filling the bucket with water, she was gazing at the reflection of the moon, right, in the water, surface of the bucket, when the bottom suddenly fell out. The bucket now empty of water, empty of the moon's reflection. And in that moment, Chiona realized that all of her ideas about herself and all her ideas about the world and what reality is were just like the reflection of the moon. When all those ideas and expectations, judgments, criticisms were gone, what remains? Now, I'm following in the good Zen tradition. I'm not giving any answers, you'll notice, as I give this talk. So, now, I really like this poem and the story of Chiono. Her Buddhist name was Mugai Nyodai. And we don't chant the names of the ancestors here regularly. But if you go to one of the more larger monasteries, for example, they chant the male ancestors, and now we also chant the woman ancestors. And her name is in that list that's chanted. So why do I like this poem? Well, there's no fanfare in the story of awakening here, right? Just a woman doing an everyday job of hauling water from a well in a worn bucket. No different from any one of us, really. Although we don't haul water in an old bucket much these days. But, you know, it could be us vacuuming the carpets. It could be us cleaning the cat litter. Or folding the washing. I doubt that Chiono expected anything special to happen. And really, nothing special did happen. No bodhisattvas or celestial Buddhas suddenly appeared. No petals started to drop from the heavens. No trumpets sounded at her awakening. Just the bottom of the bucket fell out, and the reflection of the moon disappeared with the water. And we are left to wonder what else gave way at that moment in Chiono. What else vanished with the water and the reflection of the moon? Chiono left us his poem. And I think she's asking us or encouraging us to reflect. What are we doing? Are we aware? Are we aware of our own constant work? As she puts it in the poem, this way and that, this way and that. Our constant work at trying to keep this old pale of the self, our self view, right? Don't we work hard on that? So perhaps awakening is not a matter of getting something by dint of your hard work, but more of relaxing your grip and letting the bucket fall. Our practice in the Zen tradition confronts the dream of fashioning this kind of perfect bucket that we want to appear as. We struggle to be proficient, admirable, free of blemish, all shiny and new. But in the Zen tradition, we have to let go of this endless and impossible task to be perfect. We have to be willing to let the dream fall apart. Chiono's bucket broke into pieces at her feet. The water splashed everywhere, and the beautiful reflection of the moon was gone. But then, looking up, Chiano could see the real moon. I don't know about other lineages in this Soto Zen tradition, but the teachers I have practiced with don't talk much, if at all, about awakening or enlightenment. Of course, I've read books that did speak about awakening, giving some vivid descriptions that sounded wonderful, but I realized that created a problem for me. Because without intending it, I imagine there is such a thing as a state of awakening, something I can get to and grab a hold of. I don't know, have you ever read people's accounts of their drug trips? You know, kind of boring, really. I mean, a little bit interesting, but then you kind of want. Dogen Zenji, the Japanese priest who brought this form of practice from China to Japan in the 1200s, he left us a lot of writings. And in one essay called Genjo Koan, he wrote this: "Those who have great delusions about enlightenment are sentient beings or deluded beings. Those who have great delusion about enlightenment are sentient beings or deluded beings." I was, and I am, I think, one of those deluded beings. And I imagine all of us here, at one time or another, have had some kind of imagination, thoughts about awakening. And I think most of us first come to practice with a dream, perhaps, of awakening or enlightenment, that there is some other way of being, some state, some transformation that will appear at some time if I just practice long enough and hard enough with the right sangha and the right teacher. Something magical will happen. And that's natural, because after all, that's the way we've been taught, right? Ever since kindergarten. Study, practice, work hard, and what you do not have at this moment hopefully will appear a little bit later. Right? Material goods will be within reach because you'll be able to make money. You've worked hard. Skills will develop. You've practiced and practiced that piano. Now you can do your scales. The body will become toned, right? All that yoga and weightlifting. And knowledge will be gained, right? You'll end up with the university degree. Knowledge will be gained. So it's only natural that we tend to think awakening is something we need to get, and in that getting will be somebody other than who we are. Well, Dogen, in another essay, helps us out a little here. In his writing titled Only a Buddha and a Buddha, he wrote this: "Buddha Dharma cannot be known by a person. Since olden times, no ordinary person has realized Buddha Dharma." Yikes. Well, at first glance, this statement may seem to be confusing or maybe even depressing. Why then am I spending all my time doing zazen and reading these books and studying? No ordinary person has ever realized Buddha Dharma, according to Dogen. Well, that's one way of looking at it. But I think Dogen is encouraging us to let go of our typical way of knowing. Reading Buddhist texts, studying the writings of the ancestors, all the ways that we come to know things, I mean, that's not necessarily bad. But awakening is not something you can know in that way. And Dogen continues in that same essay, when you realize Buddha Dharma, you do not think, ah, this is awakening, just as I expected. And even if you do so, awakening is invariably different and differs from your expectation. Awakening is not like your conception of it. Accordingly, awakening cannot take place as previously conceived. When you are awakened to Buddha Dharma, you do not consider how awakening came about. You should reflect on this. What you think one way or another before awakening is not of a help for enlightenment. Well, he's pretty clear, right? Now, Dogen is really famous for his poetic and challenging ways of expressing things, but in this passage, I think he's really direct, admonishing us, let go of all preconceived ideas of awakening. And to do so, of course, we first need to acknowledge and then set down our conceptions, our fantasies that we have about awakening, or whatever kind of heavenly state or perfection we'll have that will solve all our life's problems. But here's one more quote, just I think important. Dogen wrote, although enlightenment is not like any of the thoughts preceding it, this is not because such thoughts were actually bad and could not be enlightenment. I just wanted to include that so that you won't feel bad about any thoughts or dreams or imaginations you've had or fantasies about awakening. Dogen says they're not bad and they're not really separate from awakening, but they're not awakening. Dogen tells us all those thoughts, your ideas about awakening, they're okay. And awakening actually includes those. But they themselves are not awakening. There's more. You may wonder, well, what can be said then about awakening? Dogen and other ancestors telling us, forget all you think about it. What can we say about awakening then? Because we do need something, however hazy the vision is. At least I think so. Perhaps we can begin with the Buddhist understanding of the interconnectedness through that beautiful metaphor of Indra's net. And we've talked about Indra's net before. So in this metaphor, the cosmos is described as a vast, multidimensional net with jewels lying at each of the intersecting nodes. And each jewel, these multifaceted jewels, reflect the light from every of the other jewels. Each node then intimately and immediately is interconnected with each and every other node, right? Reflecting back and forth. This light is reflecting. And so each and every node is participating in and reflecting the totality of the cosmos. It's kind of like an infinite ecological net, which leaves nothing outside. So this metaphor is describing what we awaken to. Whether it's a big awakening or little awakening or medium-sized awakening. And this interconnectedness does not depend on a specific teaching or on great awakening teachers. It's been recognized that this is simply the way it is. Nagarjuna, the great Indian philosopher of the second and third centuries in India, he expresses that awakening itself is the fundamental property of the cosmos. And he describes it this way, just a little piece of a long poem that he writes. Nagarjuna wrote, "When Buddhas don't appear and their followers are all gone, the wisdom of awakening burst forth by itself." Pretty cool, eh? The wisdom of awakening bursts forth by itself. Well, it does it all the time. Dogen writes this about this very fact of the awakening, the wisdom awakening bursting forth by itself, constantly and endlessly. Dogen writes, "The trees, the grasses, the land involved in this all emit a bright and shining light and preach the profound and incomprehensible Dharma, which is endless. Trees, grasses, wall, and fence expound and exalt the Dharma for the sake of ordinary people, sages, and all living beings." This is Dogen's way of saying the same thing. Everything, everything, exalting and preaching the Dharma for you and for me. So perhaps this gives us a clue that rather than developing or gaining something, awakening is becoming aware of the way things are. In our Zazen, we become aware of the permeability of this kind of constructed self of Michael. Right? It becomes a little more permeable. It's not quite as solid as I felt it was. And we begin to open, or we begin to awaken to the boundlessness, a sense of boundlessness. And maybe we begin to awaken to the expounding of the Dharma by the trees and grasses, wall and fence that Dogen speaks of. And don't you feel this, really? Stepping outside after you've been on your computer all day or on the phone, dealing with some issue, and you step outside. Just the grass, already. There's a kind of release. Walk in the trees, and you sense something. They whisper the Dharma to you. Now, according to the Zen tradition, the moment Siddhartha became the Buddha, the moment after his awakening, he proclaimed, "I and the great earth and all beings simultaneously achieve the way. I and the great earth and all beings simultaneously achieve the way." Now, I thought when I first read this, what a startling thing to say. Wouldn't it be more appropriate to say something like, "I got it. I did it. Eureka." And so what is this about together with all beings on the earth that the Zen tradition, these words the Zen tradition puts in the Buddha's mouth? Well, I think they illustrate qualities of awakening. At least help us, again, getting a little hazy vision. So rather than a transcendent mystical experience that makes us impervious or immune to the troubles of this world, which is kind of what we want, partly, right? It's the exact opposite to that. And that's what makes it so beautiful. When we understand that what our lives really are, we understand there could not be me apart from you, nor you apart from me. There is only we, us. There is only connection, and therefore there is only compassion. Deep insight. Awakening in the Zen tradition, I think, really is identical to compassion. It is our true nature. It is our home. So another way to express this in the Zen tradition is that we awaken to our Buddha nature, which is simply the awe-inspiring nature of the universe itself. And in that awakening, small or vast, because it comes in different flavors, chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, Neapolitan, it goes on. Small or vast, we become aware of our Buddha nature. And without thinking about it, we reach out to help others, knowing that their intrinsic nature is just like ours. So I think awakening is as varied as we are. It can be dynamic, like some of the Zen stories have. It can be perhaps a slow wearing away of this kind of encrusted sense of self that we have. Maybe it's a sudden leap, like off a rock into a cold pool of water. Or maybe it's a slow soaking in, like walking in the mist and our clothes gradually getting wetter. It can be perhaps an unexpected bright flash, or it can be as subtle as a cat winding about your feet. The ways Buddhist literature and teachers have often referred to awakening are just as varied. Some Japanese words like satori, kensho, opening the inner eye, the full moon of wisdom, universal nature, true nature, vast empty field. Perhaps we could even say ever-present grace. As awakening bursts forth at any time in any place, right? Not just in the Zendo. In fact, often not in the Zendo, it seems, when you read the stories. But in hauling water from the well, vacuuming the carpets, helping someone to pick up change that they've dropped. And yet, describing and cataloging awakenings is like holding a handful of water. We have it for a moment, and then it's gone. Poets, painters, artists of all kinds, I think, come closest to expressing awakening. But whatever the experience, a momentary flash or a deep, profound insight, it is just an experience which is soon gone. And we're faced then with how do we express it in our daily life. So if you want to know how deep a person's experience of awakening was, don't read their account of it. Look at their life in 10 years. We should know that everyday acts can become dances of awakening. Serving a cup of tea, preparing a meal, cleaning the bathroom, these can all be dances of awakening. Here's a quote from Suzuki, Shunryu Suzuki, the founder of San Francisco Zen Center. And I think this quote kind of opens up another aspect of awakening for us. But in this quote, he uses the word enlightenment. He writes, or he said, "It is a kind of mystery that for people who have no experience of enlightenment, enlightenment is something wonderful. But if they attain it, it is nothing. But yet, it's not nothing. Do you understand? For a mother with children, having children is nothing special. It's just having children. That is Zazen. So if you continue this practice, more and more you will acquire something. Nothing special, but nevertheless something. You may say universal nature, or Buddha nature, or enlightenment. You may call it by many names. But for the person who has it, it is nothing. But it is something." So Suzuki Roshi is telling us that awakening does not separate us from shared circumstances of human life. But it does perhaps transform how we respond to them. Maybe one way to express this is to say we are no longer in exile from the world. We are intimate with it. So what is awakening? Well, you can read many books that explore awakening in many traditions. But I don't think that will be of much help. We each must ask the question for ourselves in a way that resonates in our heart. And perhaps for you, the question will not be what is awakening, but more like who am I? What is this life? What am I doing here? What is this about? Questions like these represent the real questions that we must pursue seriously. If you get caught up in the daily dramas of life, then you will be pushed and pulled by those dramas, powerless in who or what you will become. It will be as if life has just happened somehow behind your back, out of your control completely. Dogen tells us throughout his writings over and over again, study the self. And through that study, you begin to forget the self. This study is our Zazen and all the other ways that we practice. When the limited, confining boundaries of self are all forgotten, what remains? I was thinking, you know, that's kind of a trick question. Dogen tells us, you know, awakening is reality itself. So there is no observer, no person who awakens. Just what? Indrasnet? What? Suzuki Roshi expressed it this way. There are, strictly speaking, no enlightened people. There is only enlightened activity. So, friends, let's put aside as much as we can our imaginings of awakening or enlightenment and pick up the real questions of our lives. These, I think together with our Zazen and practice, will set the compass of our life. And one day, maybe the bottom of our bucket will fall out. Or maybe one day we'll simply notice that the water in the bucket has slowly leaked away. Either way is fine. So I'd like to end with one more little poem. This is a poem by Izumi Shikibu. And she was one of the great woman poets of Japan, lived in the Heian period, I think in the 900s is when she lived. She was a lady of the imperial court who had a very colored life in the imperial court, and later gave it all up and became a nun, a Buddhist nun, and practiced for many years. And this is her poem. Watching the moon at dawn, solitary mid-sky, I knew myself completely, no part left out. Watching the moon at dawn, solitary mid-sky, I knew myself completely, no part left out. Thank you.
So page 3 of your chapbook?